The podcast you're about to hear is made possible thanks to the generous supporters of patreon.com/Ian Bolesworth and patreon.com/burials and beyond. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to contribute and you'd like to get involved, there's tons of other content on both patrons as well, then please consider coming joining and helping the project along. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Loopholes, episode 14. It's the 14th episode. The one just after 13, the unlucky one, remember? And the one before 15, which is just a normal one again. I'm Ian Bolesworth, hello.
And I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
Now, I've got some things to tell you before we even start.
Oh, right,
you don't
go
know
on.
About. I mean, we're slightly delayed for various reasons. The last reason that we were delayed was because Kate had to watch an online auction.
Yes.
For a bookcase, which you didn't get.
No, but I've put a bid in for another one after, so it's all to play
for. Fantastic. So that's going on here, just so you get a sense of what's going
on. It's exciting.
Also, I've got some hospital doctory things this week. So I've been having to take my blood pressure every day, 3 times a day. And I wish to draw some attention to something for you, that my blood pressure has rocketed just before recording.
Really?
Yeah, it's gone massive.
Oh.
Yeah, huge. So I think this happened, I reckon, a couple of years ago to me, where I started getting very anxious about podcast recordings.
Yeah.
I used to do them very matter-of-factly, not bothered at all. I did so many over the years. But a few years ago, just started getting really anxious about recordings and then the edit and all that sort of thing.
Do you think it's because you're just focusing on the edit?
No, that's always been the case. With every podcast. I've edited every podcast.
Oh, I know that.
So I don't know what I'm anxious about, because I'm more than happy to sit down and talk to you, and I enjoy doing Loopholes.
Yeah.
It might be because I know there's some science coming up.
I know. Should we check my blood pressure as well? Because I think mine might top yours.
We could potentially check it, yeah. There is some science in the comments. We should do the comments now, because I've sort of done a cursory bit of research on what's been spoke about. And I'm not confident with it. And I don't know whether or not to try and blag it and speak like I know about it.
Yeah.
Or whether to just tell the truth and be like, I am literally playing this by ear at the moment.
Okay.
This is what I believe it to mean.
Yes. Well, if it's science-y, you're on your own there, love.
But we just said, didn't we? Because of what we do and how we look at things, we should know about science.
We should, but it's just not as exciting, is it?
Well, that doesn't apply to me, because I'm not, I don't get excited by all the woo ghosties all over the place.
Right,
but I was never very good at science.
Yeah, I think I'm still in the mindset of, excuse me, I've got my GCSEs.
Yeah, I like arty things.
Yeah.
But I can speak about science. I just don't understand it. Right, so comments from last week on my one. Dan Norton said, my dad played War of the Worlds. They're still going about War of the Worlds.
The trauma is entrenched
in the
comments.
A lot when I was a kid, and I seem to have come away from that relatively unscathed. He did make me watch The Sixth Sense when I was 8, though, and that scared me. So Dan Norton, again, another one we're going to have to pass on your details to Esther Anson.
Yeah.
But bully for you that War of the Worlds didn't scare you.
Yeah.
Well done, you. Aren't you brave? I've been affected for life. Kevin Moore, I always thought Simply was performing a celebrity seance. This narrative is getting insane.
It's getting really complicated.
I don't really know how to get out of it. I've not even thought about Simply and the King for today. I've not even thought about them.
Don't let them know that.
Right, here we get to some science.
Right, okay.
Michael Oatmilk, I think what you're looking for in your discussion of the probability of finding life beyond Earth is the Drake equation. So this referred to my claim about aliens and UFOs and that sort of thing. Why is it ridiculous that we are the only thing in the universe in anywhere?
Yeah.
Well, why is that not ridiculous?
Lewis Walker brought up the Drake equation as well.
Oh, really?
In my comments as well.
Saying what?
Saying for the estimation of alien civilization like us in our galaxy, there is the Drake equation, which even as a mathematical argument, it tries to wrangle the sheer microcosm and macrocosm of the universe.
Okay, well, what we need to know about the Drake equation. So it's a hypothetical equation. So it's not, there is no answer to it.
Yeah.
And it's, this is, again, I know all about this. I don't know anything about this. I'm giving myself two edit options.
All right, good.
I've known about the Drake equation for many, many years, and I know the intricacies of the Drake equation. Right. I'm something of an expert on the Drake equation.
I can't shut you up about it, really, can I?
I don't know anything about the Drake equation other than what I've Googled today.
Yeah, clueless.
Okay, there's my two edit options.
Brilliant.
Again, the second one is true. So it's a number of points. It's considered by some to be the most famous equation after E equals MC squared.
Yeah.
In those communities.
Yeah.
Like nerds and all that sort of thing. And because it can't be solved or calculated,
yes,
it's mainly used as a point of discussion. So something to spark discussion and to, I guess, hypothesise on things.
Yeah.
So basically, all the different points that you have to look at in the Drake equation, one's the number of civilizations in the Milky Way whose electromagnetic emissions are detectable.
Right.
The next one is the rate of formation of stars suitable for the development of intelligent life, number per year. The next one is the fraction of those stars with planetary systems. I'm saying this all off the top of my head.
Yeah.
The next one is the number of planets per solar system with an, what was it again? An environment suitable for life. That was it. So I've not spoke about this for quite a while. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the points. What was the next one? It was the fraction of suitable planets. That was it. The fraction of suitable planets on which life actually appears.
Yes.
So that can just be like little cells and amoebas and that sort of thing. The fraction of life-bearing planets on which intelligent life emerges. I'm doing really well here remembering this. The fraction of civilizations that develop a technology that produces detectable signs of their existence and the average length of time such civilizations produce such signs. Brackets, years. That I always remember it in my head as brackets.
As brackets,
Years.
Well, yeah. I feel like you just paraphrased me, really.
Yeah. They're all given letters. It's N, R, I can't remember now. R, oh no, it's R asterisks. F, little f, small p. Little m, whatever all these things mean. But it's L, apparently, that's dependent on alien behaviour. So L is the average length of time such civilizations produce such signs.
Mm-hmm.
So it would require alien behaviour to happen on there. Look, I don't care about any of this. What I can tell you is it's been 70 years that this has been around, the Drake equation.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that it's just a bit of fun for scientists.
Right.
Even the actual creation of the equation was an unofficial thing. It was just I think we were just having a pint.
Yeah.
I think. And the terms of it haven't changed in 70 years.
Right.
You know, so for all the discussion on that, there's been no amendment made. So I presume Einstein, when he did E equals MC squared, did E equals MC cubed at one point. Do you know what I mean? Just honed it down to that. This hasn't changed in 70 years.
Yeah.
I should say as well that Guy Wilson replied to Michael Oatmilk in the comments and said the Drake equation is extremely interesting, but as you say, the factors are very hard to estimate. It can be easily manipulated to come out with the answer you want. It's because it's a discussion formula, basically.
Yeah.
I do think it should be considered along with the Fermi paradox, and I do think, Guy, that you can sod off. I'm not Googling that as well. But Guy, look, he explains it a bit, which is a more philosophical argument that essentially gives light to the conflict between common high estimates of the probability of extraterrestrial life versus the fact that there is no clear and obvious evidence of it. All very interesting stuff. To nerds. Michael Oatmilk replies saying, we could also talk about the Anthropic argument. I mean, I think they're doing this to wind me up. I do genuinely think that. Because he says, but I think this is going to end with Ian bullying us on the next episode for posting such long replies. I've no issues with long replies. I've got no issues.
No.
You knock yourselves out in these comments. Honestly, we said that a few weeks ago. You go for it. This is an open discussion for all to contribute. As far as I'm aware, the Anthropic argument. Now, let me know if I've got this right, if this is correct. I think what it is because we are considering the possibility of alien life, the fact that we found nothing means we are either in the majority of existence, as in there's more of us than them, or they don't exist at all. Because if there were more of them than there are of us, they would have found us by now. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we've established this precedent that if there are any further questions about theories or equations, especially the Drake equation, then they can all really be forwarded to you directly.
Well, I do know all about the Drake equation, but I will just, I mean, you might end up explaining the Drake equation to me, listener, and I might say, no, you're wrong there, unfortunately. You're wrong, unfortunately, if it is turning out to be an argument against me.
Right, okay.
Then I'll just say, no, that's wrong. I know all about it. I've researched this longer than you. Yeah. I'll do all that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, I'm sat next to a bookshelf just full of your publications.
Drake equations, yeah. And a lot of my papers that I've done on it.
Yeah.
But the Anthropic argument, I believe, is more weighted in my favour, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do agree with that, definitely. Craig Harrison said, another fab episode. Many thanks both. Craig's got the right idea, hasn't
he? Yeah, thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Craig. Scott said, the issue I have, this is all still to do with alien stuff and mm-hmm. us not being alone in the universe, is that the chances of us crossing paths with another sentient species are exceptionally small. Let us say a spacefaring civilization might arise after, for argument's sake, the human evolutionary scale, over 200,000 or so Earth equivalent years, and then maybe they get a few thousand before zapping themselves. This, in amongst billions of years and light years of distances, we will probably never realistically ever be aware of them. I think that sounds like it is part and parcel of the Drake equation
mm-hmm.
and the Anthropic
yeah.
argument as well.
So it's like the probability of existence and then the probability of interaction are yeah. completely separate things.
Really. But again, I think this was applying to the idea that I said last week. Well, how many?
Mm.
How many before this isn't ridiculous? So tell me how many planets should have life on them before you stop saying, that's ridiculous. I can't believe we're the only people here.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe us and them 10 others are the only people here. There must be more. At what point does that stop? And you go, yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm.
Which I guess is the Drake equation.
Yeah.
But it's too complicated to work out. But Scott continues, basic life is probably quite likely, at least to bacteria level, as it is quite incredible where life gets found, even on Earth, e.g. deep sea vents where creatures do not use oxygen. As a lapsed geologist, do not underestimate the importance of deep time. I don't know what that is. A lot can happen, and life has been knocking about nearly 4 billion years on Earth. Maybe our Goldilocks zone isn't necessarily the be-all and end-all, but why would they anally probe backwoods farmers? And Jeremy Light replied saying, can confirm as a backwoods farmer, I have no idea why any other sentient life form would want to anally probe me. Don't do yourself down, no. Jeremy. Come on, mate.
So you've got a lovely bomb.
I'm sure it's perfect, unless they could absorb information from my brain that way. But they can go in through the brain, we know that, don't we?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you that I didn't... It's not that I tapped out your comments at all. It's just I realised that for a while I was reading that as backwoods farmer. Not backwoods farmer.
Like,
so they wrote backwoods farmer, and I was thinking,
drives
like,
his tractor backwards and just smashes through all his crops.
No, worse than that.
Oh God.
Thinking,
see, look, I've got such a lovely, pure little mind.
That's what I thought they meant, though.
And then you come in and just blast through it, and your combine harvester of filth.
It's not a phrase I would particularly use, calling somebody backwards, but I thought they were doing it about themselves, that's all. So I was thinking along those lines when I was formulating my replies. Ergo, I don't have a reply, because all my replies were based on...
God.
Jeremy also said, there was a lot of multiple comments this week on my one. Great podcast as always. Thank you, Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Interesting to learn about the Fox Sisters, as Rochester, New York is only about an hour and a half away from where I live, and I've never heard of them until listening to these episodes.
Ah.
Annette Truby also said on the Fox Sisters, heard many tales of the Fox Sisters, but never so comprehensive. I do think it's a sad tale and do think they were horribly used and manipulated. They were children, and we've seen plenty of modern day child stars who went off the rails and never found their way to happiness or even stability.
Yeah.
Again, it seems like every week I have to say, yeah, I was being a bit facetious last week, but I also do have that little bit in me
mm-hmm.
that's like, no, what an adventure you had. What a boring life you could have had.
Yeah.
And what an adventure. Which can also be a rubbish life, you know, what we would consider to be something that's like quite tragic.
Yes.
Could still be a very unique life.
Yeah.
I don't know, would you choose it? Would you choose a tragic life over a dull and uninteresting life?
Maybe.
If at go.
Yeah.
Whoever's in charge said, right, you can either have this.
Excitement or dull. And yeah. The excitement might be
grim. Heartbreaking as well. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think if you're in the midst of tragedy yourself, you would go, I wish I just had a stable, nothing life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all
perspective, isn't it? But if you have a stable, nothing life, you'd be like, I wish something would happen.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what I was very clumsily trying to get to.
Yeah. But with Jeremy saying that he lived near Rochester.
Yeah.
There are still the foundations of the Fox House that you can go and visit. That's kind of regarded as like the birthplace of spiritualism.
Is it a tourist place?
Sort of, not like Disney.
Okay.
But it's more like a roadside attraction. You know, there are no rides.
Wait, I wasn't expecting rides. But I mean,
if there was, I'd be on that plane now.
Has it got like a blue plaque equivalent? Is it kind marked of, as
it
a
It is
thing?
Marked. And you can go inside.
Can you go and pay to go inside? And
I don't know if it's paid or not, because there's not really much there. It's literally plaque and foundations.
Right.
Because the original fox house...
Well, I think you'll find it's called a den. They don't call it a fox house. It's called a den.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Where foxes live.
Right, I'm sorry. The original wooden fox den...
Yeah, they're very good diggers.
Was deconstructed and taken to a spiritualist commune called Lilydale, which is still a spiritualist commune today. It's like the biggest one in America. And it was rebuilt there as a sort of a shrine to spiritualism.
Matt Ebbs called me out, by the way, in the comments. Matt Ebbs, who I've been nothing but lovely to for decades.
Many years, yeah.
Bolsters in and goes, now, the problem with your... And starts it with that, now.
Oh, Matt.
Now, the problem with your ant analogy is that you do know that there will be ants elsewhere, not just in your kitchen. So I was saying that if you saw an ant in the kitchen, you'd be like, that's not the only one.
Yeah.
Well, Matt.
If that is your real name.
Matt Ebbs, mate. Well, Matt, I know that. This is the whole point. That's why I use that as an example, because you know that ants exist on this planet.
Yeah.
And if it was in your kitchen, you know that they are nearby there as well. But yes, you're right. There will be other ones all in the countryside and stuff, and miles away as well. The point I was saying is it doesn't follow that because there are loads of ants on Earth, there are ants on another planet as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying, Matt, if you'd bother listening. I think, like others have said in these comments, are you just going along with everyone, are you, sheep? Have said in these comments, the likelihood of some form of extraterrestrial life is high due to the amount of space and viable planets there are. See, no.
Yes.
No, that doesn't follow.
Matt's a clever lad.
No, he's not.
He's kicked your ant analogy to the curb.
Whether it's intelligent life, this is Matt still banging on. Whether it's intelligent life is another matter, but I find it quite scary to think of this one planet we're on being the only place in the entire universe to hold any kind of life. Probably the reason why I held on to the idea that there is life elsewhere. I don't happen to think any alien life forms have visited Earth, however. So why have you got all these caveats in it? What's all this based on? It's all based on feelings, isn't it? Why does it bother anyone that we might be the only things to exist? When I've said that argument before, people have said that's an arrogant perspective. They've said, oh, that's how full of yourself you are. It's like, no, I think humans are really rubbish.
Yeah.
I don't think we're brilliant at all.
It's more of like an existential fear, though, isn't it? It's like separate from earthly fears. It's the idea of like...
You're all crackers.
When you see pictures of space and you see that little blue dot.
Yeah.
It's that fear of vast areas.
But how
does
it change your life? How would it change anything for you? If you knew for a fact, if it was on the news tomorrow, oh, we found a civilization just like us on Quasar Sector 692. Planet up there, would you feel better? Would you not be frightened anymore?
I think it's more like a psychological state. It's like, you know, when you see one singular boat in a massive empty ocean.
Yeah.
Or people have a fear of being in deep water.
But why?
I think it's that same sort of feeling of, I'm in a vast expanse of nothingness and I don't know what's out there. That's the element that brings the fear. And I think that's the same with space. And we think about if we are the only planet to support life, we might not consciously want to think about, you know, the emptiness of the universe.
I don't get it. I really don't understand.
It's like this inherent fear.
I don't get that. Like, I don't understand when people have a fear. You know the idea of religion and faith and an afterlife being a comfort to you?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. Because I think it's more comforting to think that when you're switched off, you're switched off. It's gone. You've got no consciousness, nothing. You're just gone. You just don't exist. So I've always found it quite an arrogant, to use that word, state to be like, the idea of me not existing is awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's arrogant because it's like, how important you think you are. And it's dumb because it's like, you wouldn't be aware of it anyway. You wouldn't be sat somewhere in just a white room just going, oh, nobody knows about me anymore. I'm not living anymore.
But it's still gone. That fear. It's the same thing. It's the fear of the unknown. And it's that loss of sense of self. If we can get in our heads that, okay, the body dies, we're all right with that because we know this intangible part of ourselves lives on, then that in itself is a comfort.
No, I'm more perturbed by the idea of, like, seeing grandparents or whatever and them saying, yeah, and I've been watching over you, and me going, oh, my God.
Oh, God. Actually, I think I'll change my stance on this.
Are you respecting my privacy? Are there loopholes in heaven? Where they say, yeah, you can watch other people, but not when they're in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Or not when...
Let's leave it there, shall we?
Or not when they're whatever.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you defended Matt Herbs. I'm glad that you're great friends with Matt Herbs now.
I am now.
I'm glad you're going to get married. Oh, sorry, I must say before I forget, Matt Herbs left another comment as well. Sorry.
Is he insulting me?
I didn't read all of them. I'll just read you Matt Herbs' other comment as well, where he basically slammed your entire philosophical existence.
Oh.
Sorry for the double comment, Matt says, but I've now listened past the first section. And when we were with my grandma... Before she died, she seemed to see a couple of people.
Mm-hmm.
He's luring you in here. We read that brains as they die often call up many people from the past as part of neurons firing. It's almost like your brain is trying to comfort you as you pass. So yeah. Matt's basically there sucking up to me a little bit, however he is trampling over a lot of things.
But for you.
That have been of comfort to you.
It's all right. Because Matt, if you were listening past the first section...
Yeah.
We covered that, didn't we?
See what you've done, Matt.
We covered that rush of neurological
serotonin. See what you've done, swatting in like that. You've alienated everyone now. Yeah. Now you have no friends here now, Matt.
Go on, Matt. Go and sit in the corner.
Go on, Matt.
Go on, with your Duplo.
Oh, goodness me.
I've had enough of him.
I've been so lovely to Matt Ebbs on Patreon this week, and it's now made me feeling a nice, warm feeling. And then he's listened to this and I've gone, you know, that nice, warm feeling, mate, have some of that. Love you, Matt, you're a smasher. Go on.
Right, so I have some slightly less scientific comments to go through, which is quite nice, isn't it? Firstly, from Hazel Quinlan, very importantly, agrees with me, that Watership Down was absolutely terrifying at
times.
I've
not doubted that at any point.
And
I've not seen it.
On Twitter, there were many people coming to my little fearful club of rabbit hell agreeing that Fiverr's visions were absolutely terrifying.
I wasn't debating
it. So take your War of the Worlds and stick it right up your little probed bum.
Goodness me. This is because I've got fighting with Matt Ebbs and my fightiness has now spread around the room.
Yes.
I wasn't doubting at any point that it's scary. That's why I don't want to watch it. Not because it's scary.
I have been trying.
I think I'll find it upsetting.
To get you to watch two miserable animal animated films with me recently.
I don't want to watch miserable stuff.
Also, Sophie Cleverly said that it was her fault for leaving a ridiculously long comment as usual, but she would like to clarify that I don't think ghosts are more likely than aliens.
Sorry, Sophie, you can't retrospectively change your opinion. Basically, once it's committed to the actual podcast, then that is your opinion now.
Yeah.
Even if we've misunderstood it,
yeah.
It is your opinion now, fact. That's canon now, Sophie.
But now we need to go, oh, Sophie, are you all right?
Okay.
Because she nearly died once.
Oh.
And literally all she can remember is waking up and hearing the nurses talking about how she nearly died. And also they were going to a party dressed as Greek goddesses. I honestly feel a bit cheated that I didn't get any magic glowing lights or peaceful feelings, unless we interpret this as proof that the ancient Greek gods are the real ones.
Okay. Sophie might be able to help me here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sophie, with what you said there, so this is a dead straightforward question,
mm-hmm.
referring back to what we've discussed already.
Yeah.
If you were told at year dot in your life, at the start of your life, okay, and at one point in your life you're going to nearly die as well. I don't know what the circumstances were, you know, mm-hmm. it's obviously going to be something horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if you were told then, do you want that experience in this existence or do you definitely not want it in there? You will survive it, but you will have that. Point, would you say yay or nay? That's my philosophical question.
Okay.
So, for example, I've been in hospital a lot over the years, primarily with kidney stones.
Mm-hmm.
Hugely, hugely painful thing.
Mm.
Agony, you want nothing but for it to stop when it's happening. If I'd have been asked at year dot, do you want the experience of kidney stones at some point in your life? I don't know what I would say.
Really?
I can't say for definite that I said absolutely not, because I've no experience of it.
Yeah.
So I only know that trauma because I've been through that trauma. Mm. So I think there's something to it that you are, you know, you're a product of your experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have no experiences of nothing, how can you be a rounded person? Or how can you have perspective on the highs and lows of life unless you've gone through the lows?
Yeah.
I just think sometimes we are quick to go, it's all been awful, and not realise that the awfulness has contributed to what we now are.
Yes.
Sometimes negatively, yeah, by the way.
No, I'd completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree. Certainly I wouldn't be the absolute charmer that I am today.
Yeah.
Were it not for a delightful string of horrific trauma.
But would you have preferred to have not had the trauma?
Yeah.
And just been all right?
In some instances, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a difficult question.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not saying that you should feel that. I'm not saying that you should willingly accept trauma into your life.
Yeah.
But if you sit and think about it as a narrative, your life, and what certain traumas have contributed to how you can even speak about them later on, to the perspective you have on things later on, would you have gone without them? Perhaps a deathbed would be a better place to ask the question.
Yeah.
Do you wish that hadn't happened, or are you glad it happened? Do you understand why it happened in your narrative?
Mm-hmm. Lewis Walker says, another fun episode. Yeah, cheers, yeah. Lewis.
This one's the same, Lewis. This one's fun, isn't it?
God. He also says, with the near-death experiences... Oh, we're going back down again. Is there much anecdotal information from cultures or religions that have different ideas to death? Is the light at the end of the tunnel such a cultural monolith? Or could it be a physical phenomena that many people have experienced?
She loopholed that last week, Lewis. She made sure to say that all these people, when I said about them seeing Jesus and all that, she went, no, they just see a supreme being. It's not specific to their own faith at all. So, no.
That's exactly how I said it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is exactly the way she did. There we go. There's the comments this week. Do leave comments again for this episode. If you wish to, by all means, we're more than happy to have the discussion. I won't always be as fighty as this. I think I'm overtired and I'm slightly worried because of my blood pressure. So I've just turned into a naughty little boy. So I do apologise. Not to you, Matt Ebbs, you idiot. Welcome to Loopholes episode 14. What you wanting to talk about today this episode of Loopholes? You told me you got it down to two. You said it was going to be either exorcisms.
Yes.
Or demonology is what you told me. But I don't know what you've selected.
Well, I thought we'd have a nice little friendly chat about exorcisms.
Okay, fine. Well, in that case, can we do demonology next week?
Yes.
Okay, because I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to respond next week. So next week, demonology we'll talk about. I have heard you talk about the rise in demonology at the moment, that all these yobby blokes going around places seem to be obsessed with demons at the minute.
Yep.
Exorcisms, however, I do have some opinions on, so let's...
Mm-hmm. Well, the two kind of feed into one another.
They do really, don't they?
Yeah.
They are a similar sort of thing.
There's been a notable rise in exorcisms, not only in the world of ghost bothering and ghost TV shows and that sort of thing, but worldwide, like sanctioned exorcisms by the Catholic Church over the last few decades.
Really?
Massive rise.
That really surprises
does
me.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would have thought it'd be something that'd be like, just spoke about a daft thing that they used to do, like interfering with kids. They did.
So, the...
No, they did do that. A lot.
Yeah. So...
I'm not holding all Catholics responsible for that. I'm just saying that the upper echelons of the Catholic Church interfered with kids a lot. That's just a fact.
So, I think, really...
I think what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to establish that they have form for horribleness.
Yes.
What I'm trying to establish, okay. For what I would view as horribleness, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are people within the Catholic Church...
Oh, God, right.
In all their robes and their jewels and stuff, who would somehow justify it.
So...
Or not consider it something to apologise for. But myself, personally...
Yeah.
I don't really like it very much at all.
No. Exorcisms.
I'd go as far as to say I feel strongly about it.
Yeah. Yeah, really would. Very bad. Yeah. Okay, so exorcisms.
Yeah.
I think we really need to kind of get straight in our heads what an exorcism is.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of our understanding of exorcisms really does come from The Exorcist.
Okay.
So we see exorcisms as this really rare Catholic rite.
Okay.
Physical phenomena, heads spinning, lobbing each other off the bed, that sort of thing. Mm. Whereas in reality, exorcism, as in the Catholic Church, because exorcism itself has been conducted in one form or another for centuries from many, many different cultures.
Right.
It's big today in Christian and Jewish cultures. They're like the main ones. But sort of the earliest recorded exorcist activity happened in China, of course, in the Bible. Jesus himself expelled demons from a man who came up to him and was supposedly possessed by a great many demons. And then Jesus cast them out into a herd of pigs who then ran off and drowned themselves. But Christianity and animal rights is a topic for another day.
Yeah. I think, though, that religion, organised religion as a whole,
mm-hmm.
I know it's not a whole, but organised religion that utilises this is fair game in the analysis of this. So I try my hardest within my life to not be disrespectful of people's beliefs.
Yes.
And I mean that throughout. I mean, even people believing in ghosts. To not really be disrespectful of it.
Yeah.
Unless it's based on nothing. You know, so basically, if I feel someone has sat down and thought about it and have reached a conclusion, even though I might argue it's mental illness, I still would sort of respect their right to believe that.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't become harmful to anybody else. And that's the same thing that carries through in my assessment of religion and faith, is that as long as you're not harming anybody else, then you knock yourself out, go for it.
Yeah.
The problem that I have when we're discussing this sort of thing is it does harm other people. It just does all the time.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from a point of no faith and a point of no acceptance of this mythology as I see it, then it's hard for me not to be judgmental myself. Judge not, lest ye be judged. But it's a difficult thing for me because I can't suspend my disbelief.
No, but also you can understand how someone would have a dearly held faith.
I can, as well. But I can also imagine how something that's built on accumulating wealth, because wealth equals power and influence, I can also understand why they would be unscrupulous enough to use mental health to their advantage, which is my overall take on what I understand to be exorcisms.
Okay.
Don't go to the priest, go to the doctor. That's my take on this situation, right?
Yeah. And I think There are still exorcism courses being run today.
Right.
And a couple of years ago, Pope Francis personally performed exorcisms.
Right.
And he convened an exorcism workshop at the Vatican a few years ago that was attended by 250 priests from 51 countries. The Vatican today, I think, is very conscious of faith working in conjunction with medicine.
Okay.
Rather than putting that above modern medicine. But exorcism in its real form, which can just be saying rites, it can be blessed salt, it can be holy water, putting your hands on someone, on someone's head, and focusing your faith on bringing out the believed demon from that individual.
How do they assess a demon? So is it always to expel a demon? Is that what an exorcism is? Is it somebody who is possessed by a negative force?
This is the exorcism is a really broad, it's a broad church today. So it can be used as a means to ease someone's mind when they feel like they've gone through a period of bad luck.
Okay.
So it can be used as a comforting tool. But I find it quite interesting that today exorcisms are requested so frequently that bishops and clergy within the Catholic Church were taught how to expel demons remotely via mobile phone. You can have a Zoom exorcism.
Is that because there was a panic about the exorcism business when the pandemic hit?
I think this was just before the pandemic, but what excellent timing. Yeah. But really, a lot of the rise of this want of exorcism isn't just from the world of esoterotica, but also there's been a massive rise in Pentecostalism in South America.
Okay. What does Pentecostalism mean?
Dynamic Pentecostalism. It's kind of a branch of Protestantism that really sort of found its feet in the 1970s, so really around the time of The Exorcist as well.
Right.
But because a lot of this took root in like Africa and Latin America, the Catholic Church had to really step up to kind of match, you know, their services and their breadth of belief, and so they pushed their own exorcism to the fore.
So there's a real problem with that, isn't there? Because that's not based on what your religion actually is. You know, that's based on keeping up with the Joneses. So that's amending and altering to stay relevant. It's like constant rebranding.
Well, I think Christianity is a very fluid belief system anyway. So like,
but if it's based on a holy text.
Oh, yes.
Which, but as I understand it, it is. How can you amend that? I'm not saying you should subscribe to it at all, because there's horrible things are said in that book. But there is an issue with that for me, for reinterpretation, for changing, for altering, for amending and all that. Because it's like, well, your whole faith and doctrine is based on this text that is supposedly the word of God.
Yeah.
Yet you, as human beings, are amending it. Again, I must stress, I don't think that anyone should be going along with that original text. I don't think that, but I do think it undermines what you are.
Yeah.
If you're just amending it, changing it, inventing things, adding things that seem to be business branding, you know, in their purest form.
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to set myself up as a potential Peter Pumpkinhead, but that's my opinion on this situation.
But I think whatever community and culture has Christianity generally thrust upon it, it will then inherently take on certain aspects of the culture it finds itself in. Or just take things like Santa Muerta, who's like a Mexican folk saint,
okay,
who a lot of us will be really familiar with visually, at least, because okay, she's like a, well, like a skeleton.
Right.
Dressed as a saint. And so she's revered by a lot of Mexican communities and a lot of Latin American communities. Whereas elements of the Catholic Church would see that as satanic worship. There's always going to be this really uncomfortable relationship between established and developing Christianity and folk beliefs and the community that they're meant to minister to.
Because they see it as competition, though. Is that not what that's boiling down to?
But also, it's the people who then believe in the gospel and then attribute it and try and put it within the context of their own lives. Not necessarily thinking, I'll twist it so people will accept it. But the way that they interpret things, we as humans will always try and integrate it into what we know, already. So I think there's a lot of that to really consider when we talk about exorcisms and belief in demons.
But at what point do you chuck out the original text? At what point are you far enough away from the original text that you go, do you know what? That's what started this off. We've taken stuff from it. We've used stuff from it. Again, you can say, we took the good stuff out of that, and the awful stuff we've dismissed completely is where we're at. So let's put that original text to one side now.
Isn't that just, that's how we get sects? That's how we get religious offshoots? Like that's how we got Mormonism.
Right.
So if you don't believe that Joseph Smith found the brass plates given to him by the angels, and then he translated them into the Book of Mormon, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
If you don't believe that actually happened, that's what you're saying. You know, that these people created kind of a secondary book to supplement the Bible with new gospels and new figures. So that's really an argument for that, you know.
Yeah.
If people want to create their own additional religions with their own additional texts, they have done.
Yeah.
Or start from scratch, Scientology, all that sort of thing.
I have no issue with Scientology. You crack on. You're doing a good job. No problem at all from over here, thank you.
Yeah, well done, Xenu.
Not messing with them.
No.
I've messed with them in the past and just about got away with it.
But, like, the Pope did conduct an exorcism in public.
Right.
So, like, not long after he was made pontiff.
Right.
In St. Peter's Square, you know, the big square just outside the Vatican. And a man had been brought along who was in a wheelchair and been brought along by a Mexican priest who said that this bloke was possessed by the devil.
Right.
And
was this because he was in a wheelchair? Is this the narrative of this?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the full context of it.
This is what I mean, though.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, we don't know that's the case.
Exactly.
Okay,
that would feed into faith healers anyway, and that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah.
But the Pope put two hands on the man's head and concentrated on driving out the demons. And that was a unplanned public exorcism.
And what happened? So these demons just came out, was just swanning about.
Well, they must have done, because, I mean, you know, if you believe
them
in it.
We didn't see them.
If you didn't believe it, then Pope, you've gone to the top. You've gone to the CEO.
How are people performing exorcisms in whatever faith they operate under? What's the checklist for a demon? Do we know that? Because, again, this is just a decision, isn't it? It's not oh, come here, let me look in your hair. You know, there are horns. Yeah, it's a demon, that. Like, you know, there's nothing tangible.
Yeah.
Other than somebody behaving as they may behave if they're bipolar. So,
exactly, yeah.
So what is the checklist?
I would say, you know, that a lot of it seems to be behavioural.
Yeah.
When we go into the Catholic version of exorcism.
It's because some bloke decides there's a demon in
but
someone.
That's when we're talking about exorcism of a person.
Okay, right. Okay.
Because there's, you know, also exorcism of a place.
Yes, okay.
And I think that's a bit more tangible. That feeds a bit more into esoterotica and what we see in kind of ghost hunting shows, when people say, my house is haunted, stuff's being chucked around, this entity has attached itself to my family.
Okay.
So then an individual would go in, and broadly under the Catholic tradition, if they weren't a priest, would exorcise the house.
I just had an amazing
idea. But you also get a lot of people in who do not have an established faith, but would still do a version of a Catholic exorcism in the name of Jesus, even though they didn't actually hold that faith themselves.
Yeah.
So then that's another interesting loophole. If you believe that the power of exorcism lies in the belief of the person giving the exorcism. And I don't want to know what your idea is. It's going to be horrible.
It's not.
What is it?
I think it's brilliant.
Go on.
I think it's an amazing idea.
Okay.
Maybe a YouTube series, but maybe a telly series. Right. I'm going to befriend a priest, modern thinking priest.
Right.
And I'm going to do a road trip with a priest.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to all these places that operate as businesses, as haunted places.
Yeah.
And exorcise them. Just from outside. Just stand outside, film it, of them exorcising the demons and the ghosts and stuff from these places.
That would be an interesting legal minefield. The homeowner could say, you've interfered with my business, you've got rid of my ghosts.
But your business apparently is a bad thing anyway. But your business is apparently a negative thing anyway. So if you, for example...
I'm not on either side. All right,
well, the one I know the most about is East Drive. Yes. So East Drive, I know the owner of East Drive, and I've been to East Drive.
Yeah.
Under duress quite a few times.
Yeah.
However, there are notices on the door at East Drive,
mm-hmm.
which say they ban Ouija boards in there, all this sort of thing, with, quote, we do not wish to exacerbate the situation.
Yes.
So I, according to what's written there, you don't have to go in, don't have to go inside at all, can literally stand outside on the road, can be outside that, and to stop the situation getting exacerbated, can have a priest exorcise whatever is in that house and cleanse that house from outside.
Yeah.
Now, we then would get into real conflict there,
mm-hmm.
because people that believe that there are ghosts in there,
yes,
spoiler alert, I don't,
yeah,
based on my own collated evidence, those people have to subscribe to this mythology, this silliness, mm-hmm. as I see it. They have to.
Yeah.
So they also have to subscribe to the idea that a power of good can overcome it and can remove these negative forces and take them out.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that the owners of these places can do about it if I can befriend a priest.
But also, if...
That's going to be the odd bit.
Yeah. But also, like you say, when these sort of locations put signs up saying, you know, don't do Ouija board, don't bring a bottle of whiskey.
I know what that's for.
Don't do all of that. Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah.
But none of them say, don't bless the house. Don't bring a bishop.
No, but it says there, we don't want to exacerbate the situation, which would imply to me, Your Honour, that in that case, they wish the situation... So if I don't exacerbate it, surely there's an implication inherent in that statement.
It's like, why don't you sort it out?
Yeah, make it better, please.
Yeah, so if you came on with your...
I don't want it to be worse.
With your holy water and your blessed salt.
Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Well, if your mate did...
My new priest mate is going to do all that.
Our priesty boy came in.
Yeah.
Lots girl, about it. Are we still sticking with the Catholic thing? Or are we going to...
But they don't let them!
No.
Oh my goodness, they don't let in 2022. They don't let... Women aren't allowed to do it.
Not in the Catholic church.
Okay. I suppose they might see it that you are all cursed anyway. You know, that might be...
Yeah, no,
maybe
right.
That's their attitude to it. Maybe.
You're dead on.
Goodness me. A lady can't be... Wow.
Learn something new every day, don't we?
Wow.
But basically, the Catholic exorcism is the one that we really know in popular culture.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing that gets talked about by ghosty botherers and things like that. People that see the devil as like a real tangible figure who's able to enact mischief and misfortune upon people rather than like a force.
Mm.
So I find it quite interesting that a lot of people who conduct pseudo-exorcisms in ghost hunting circumstances...
Who's doing this?
Well, on TV,
right.
There'll be... There's kind of like celebrity exorcists.
Okay, so they're not affiliated with a church as such?
I think in America, a couple might be.
Okay.
But I don't know how that would align with faith and with their community at large.
Yeah.
If they're like a celebrity exorcist... But I think there are a number of people who have been ordained online.
I find it terribly difficult to not be fighty about it. Like, I know because of the ethos of what we're doing here and the discussion. I think I'm still having the discussion. I know I'm being sarcastic and facetious over things that I just find completely unpalatable. And, you know, even just as much as that women can't be priests.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even that.
In the Catholic Church.
Within the Catholic Church, yeah. So it just... I can either really make fun of it and be funny about it, mm-hmm. or be really angry about it.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's a difficult thing. And my overall attitude with things like what you're talking about
mm-hmm.
is the mental health aspects of it. And it's the idea that an organisation can exploit mental health
mm-hmm.
or, do you know what, even in its most cynical form, can make people worse with their mental health issues. Something that might be relatively innocuous. Like, we all have innocuous mental health issues. All of us do.
Yeah.
And we basically tread a tightrope throughout our lives of being tipped over. So anyone that doesn't believe that mental health is an issue for them is just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take many things aligning. You will also go over the edge. You know, no matter how infallible you think you are, you will.
Yeah.
So for someone to have a starting point of something that might be quote unquote innocuous
mm-hmm.
to then exacerbate that intentionally
mm-hmm.
to put on a show to reinforce fear in other people, the devil can get you, demons mm-hmm. can get you
mm-hmm.
in order to perpetuate the strength of their organization as battlers for it makes me sick to my stomach.
It sits uncomfortably with me. Like we said before, I have a personal faith.
Yes, yes.
But also, I don't feel especially comfortably about, like you say, the relationship with mental health and faith and how that can be exploited by some unscrupulous communities or just by families around them that don't understand mental health. I think a lot of people will see the church's involvement as a means of the family completely dismissing mental health issues, whereas actually maybe they're just not as informed as others and they don't know the steps. And so they're seeing this as a last resort, rightly or wrongly. But also, I have seen the equal rise in the paranormal world and the world of ghost hunters and investigators making house calls. I think we've mentioned before, where people will be called into an individual situation, private residence, with someone saying, my house is haunted, my son has got something attached to him.
Mm.
And then this team, this is a figurative example, so they'd have no safeguarding experience. They'd only be hobbyists, paranormal hobbyists, as insulting as that term might sound. I don't mean that is a, you know, in a dismissive way, but you know, there are no requisite qualifications to be a paranormal investigator.
There's no school for exorcists anyway, is there?
There are courses which, again, they will deal in Catholic rite, but they will also deal in safeguarding.
Okay, let me rephrase it then. There's no non-biased exorcism school, is there?
Not necessarily, no.
No, there isn't. There just isn't. So it's not, because this whole thing is, again, we've got to appreciate here, as far as what I'm saying, I'm coming from a point of, I don't believe in the devil, I don't believe in demons, I don't believe in good and evil, I don't think that's even a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone is a wide spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and may do something that other people would judge to be evil, or say something evil in somebody else's eyes, that they can't even see how that would come under a negative banner, let alone an evil banner. I think evil is a really powerful non-word. It means nothing.
Yeah, and that's why it's dangerous when people have these real beliefs, whether or not they're based in an established faith, that something negative and non-human is either attached to them or attached to their house. And so I think a lot of this, not just with Catholic exorcisms, but reaching out to paranormal teams, it's another means of desperation. And so when these individuals, and it happens regularly because a lot of church communities, not just Roman Catholic, but a lot of Anglican churches, have had to go to great extents to get police involved, to get safeguarding involved, where people have brought in paranormal teams to investigate their house, who have then said, yes, you're infested with ghosts and demons, and we need to perform an exorcism. And so that's why safeguarding and paranormal ethics is such a massive topic. And that's why you get formation of charities like the UK Paranormal Society, people like that, who try and put forward an idea of these are ethical standpoints and appreciate investigating is interesting, it's fun, it can be a big defining part of your life. But when this is having real world effects on people who then will need serious care afterwards, whether that's church community or hospital care, we're getting into really dangerous, murky territory, and someone's got to be there to pick up the pieces.
But like, not to be centering my own universe, but like, it's all the times that people have said to me, what are they doing? What are they actually doing, these people? And it's like,
if people are doing house calls,
it's serious. It's psychologically harmful.
Yeah.
I would presume, and as I suppose most people would presume, that they were non-susceptible to people suggesting things to them and being taken over by that. So I would presume myself, I'm not very suggestible. I don't think I'd be hypnotised. I don't think it would work.
Yes.
It's never been tried, but I'm pretty certain.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would understand it too much for the trick to work.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody managed to convince me,
mm-hmm.
you know, I live alone. I live in isolated, out of the way.
Yeah.
If somebody targeted me and convinced me that both myself and whatever woes happened to be in my life at that time were as a result of dark forces and demons and devils and all that sort of thing, and caught me and had me believing it, I would be writhing around on a bed within a week, screaming.
Yeah.
But that would just be suggested. Goodness me, we're talking about ethics.
Mm.
And again, I'm not pointing the finger at a particular faith, but I don't really want to insult people's beliefs, but I do want to stand up for and defend when there are, quote, evil, as I see them, organisations. It's just unscrupulous organisations and unethical organisations and organisations that pertain to be about care and love and are actually about keeping people as scared as possible.
And I think we're aware of these organisations and the power that they may hold.
Mm.
But I think the real issue coming up on the outside at the minute are the non-organisations, are the individuals and the unregistered teams who can kind of capitalise financially, like you say, and ego-wise, on visiting people who, again, may have been in a bad place and got this in their head that something's in their house or in their life. And then this could just create a really dangerous wildfire, because I've been on paranormal telly.
Mm.
It's a big thing now, paranormal media.
But is one, and so it's is one better than the other? Like, are they not both? You know, you talk about safeguarding.
Mm.
Isn't just the practice of an exorcism full stop, regardless of how organised it is, regardless of how much quote-unquote experience someone has of it, or whatever, you know, whether it's somebody just walks into our house and says, I can do an exorcism, or whether it's somebody from a recognised church who says, you know, we do perform exorcisms. To me, both of them are without merit. Like, but
I think maybe it's because one's more behind closed doors and one's unacknowledged.
Right.
Which is the newer strain of exorcism. You'd rarely see a long-running paranormal show today in the US or the UK that does not have an episode on exorcisms.
Really?
Where someone who will go into a place, say they're either an exorcist or a psychic with that ability, that they've been ordained by someone, and they will exorcise a building. So it's constant reiteration. These things are real, but are now completely separate from their religious roots. They'll still use the same language. They'll still ask the demon to leave in the name of Jesus Christ.
Right.
But they themselves won't have a faith where they believe that Jesus Christ is a deity.
And is this where the crossover comes in to what we're going to talk about next week with the rise in demonology?
Is there
a crossover there as well?
Definitely.
Okay, so this is a sort of two-parter then, maybe?
Kind of,
in a sense. Okay, well, I'll have to take propranolol before we record next week. Because honestly, I'm genuinely keyed up now. I'm properly keyed up about this, and about I'll tell you all the things that are going on for me. I'm thinking, I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want to upset someone about their faith. I don't want to be like, I'm already thinking. Earlier on, I was going about them interfering with kids, and it's like, yeah, but it's not. It's child abuse.
It's established.
Yeah, but the way I was talking about it stresses me. That I feel almost cornered. That I have to fight. That I have to. I can't just, for want of a better phrase, I cannot turn the other cheek here on these things.
Yeah,
and I don't want to upset anyone. Like, I don't want to do that.
Mm.
So it's a quandary for me, this. So if you're going to start telling me next week about Bother Boys and Doc Martens going around places talking about all the demons flying around in there, you might have to stop me leaving the house to go and find them.
Can you get propanolol in a drip?
I mean, what I do have in my favour is I'll have my new priest mate, Priest Dave.
Oh, lovely Dave. Big fan.
I don't want to make it so that I've got to find one called Dave. It's going to be hard enough finding one anyway.
And it's time for everyone's favourite section, Celebrity Seance Corner.
I mean, it's my favourite section today because it's got us past that hump.
I know.
Can I just say one thing? Hang on a second. Sorry, someone say.
Okay, yeah, hello.
Myself and Simply have had a discussion.
Yes, we have been talking about it.
And we've decided we want no part in this episode.
Oh, Wow.
Yeah, we think some of it's too near the knuckle this week, and we don't want to be affiliated in any way, shape or form with upsetting anyone of faith.
That's our final take on this entire matter. Appreciate you having a discussion. Appreciate it'll go to dark places. But myself and Simply are going to happily bow out this week.
We're going to happily bow out.
Simply, I've just said we're going to happily bow out. Why do you feel the need to always repeat what I'm saying, Simply? You're backup, Simply. You just stand there as backup.
Okay, sorry, King.
Okay, now walk out together.
Okay, King.
With you behind me.
Sorry, King.
Right, there we go. That's that bit out of the way. Right.
Right, so this week we've got a multi-celebrity session again.
Is it light-hearted?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, let's get to that.
You know, like on a pinball machine when you get multi-ball.
Yeah, okay. And so what is it?
This is the Twitter seance
right.
from 2009.
Okay. Now, I've been quite enjoying that you've been telling us about particular mediums
mm-hmm.
and their story.
Yes.
We did it with Billy Chutney, or whatever he was called. What was his real name?
Leslie Flint.
And we've heard about the foxes as well. I've quite enjoyed the episodic narrative.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Are we going back to a one-off now?
I thought we can alternate between sort of medium profile corner.
Okay, right, okay. Celebrity seance because they are people conducting seances who then themselves became celebrities. Okay. So it works on two levels.
Oh, thank God for that.
I don't mind being involved with those ones. Yeah, now I understand. I understand why you want to distance yourself from this episode.
Well,
for someone
who,
as you know, and a few people in my life have known this, lives in a little bit of fear, really, about being attacked, physically attacked, that sort of thing. It's why I kind of came out away from doing live performance, really.
Yeah.
I have an odd difficulty in not keeping my mouth shut, don't I, really?
Yeah, you're a little contradiction, aren't you?
Yeah.
But don't worry, because nothing bad can happen in the celebrity Twitter seance.
It's already happened in this episode. If someone's going to do it, they've already decided.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah.
Well, in 2009, Angel's Fancy Dress, on the day before Halloween, decided that they were going to do to publicise their fancy dress business.
Yeah.
I think a bit late, though. You would have done it a bit sooner, wouldn't you?
People already
have the costumes before.
I was going to sell people personalised tombstones for Halloween this year, just didn't do it.
Yeah.
So, well done to them on just getting it a day early.
Well, yeah, fair play. I got a lovely tombstone out of it, though. Can't complain there.
Yeah.
They were doing the world's first interactive Twitter seance.
Okay.
So that was their big bump, and it made all the tabloids, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They said that they were going to get a medium in, a really well-respected psychic medium, and they would take requests as to who they would try and contact. So I found the first ever tweet...
Right.
That they did, and it said, awaiting nominations for the world's first interactive Twitter seance being held to mark Halloween 2009. Two retweets, one like.
Okay.
One comment. And the comment just said, blocking you.
Does this go on to be a successful thing, this?
Oh, mega successful. You can't shut them up.
No, does it actually take, does it take off as an idea?
No.
It doesn't.
No, it really doesn't.
This stays as small as this all the way through.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on board.
Yeah. There was a certain amount of press interest when it was announced.
Yeah.
But that faded away quite quickly.
Okay.
After the seance itself. Or the twayance.
Right.
As they named their hashtag. So nominations came in. You know, Houdini, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis, John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, Michael Jackson, Abraham Lincoln... Keeping it light, Lee Harvey Oswald, William Burroughs, Frank Sinatra.
They've all been a bit done, haven't they, these people?
Robert Johnson, Malcolm X, Chaplin. What about people from other centuries? What would you ask William Shakespeare? None of these have had a single direct reply.
Okay.
But don't you worry, because on the day of the seance, they had decided they were going to contact River Phoenix, Kurt Cobain, William Shakespeare, and Michael Jackson.
Okay.
So, who comes in first? It's River Phoenix.
Right.
And as a seance, this is very odd. It's done like a real-time Q&A.
Right, okay.
So it would be question four and then the person's initials. So
they're essentially using their Twitter at the moment to go, right, so for the next 10 minutes, our Twitter is River Phoenix.
They were basically saying, we will tweet the questions that you have supplied and the responses given by the medium. So it's like an active Q&A from the spirit world.
Right.
So River Phoenix, wonderful, tortured musician and an actor, died so tragically young. Do you regret being an actor, not a musician? So that's sort of the level of the profound questioning we're getting to.
And who are the people asking? Are they just regular Twitter users?
Supposedly, but not one of the questions is attributed to a user.
I see.
So they're either taken from the hashtag that was very sparingly used, or just
it could be either sock accounts or the tweet just didn't even happen.
Yes.
But you can search Twitter, so you can find if that question is actually there, can't you?
Yes, but this was in 2009, right, a lot of accounts have gone since then.
Particularly sock accounts.
Yes.
People don't keep those up, do they?
No. But River Phoenix was saying, I was always a musician. Acting was the job that paid the bills.
Right.
You know, we're getting this kind of really in-depth questioning. We get a lot about drugs throughout this whole Twitter seance.
Okay.
Where River said that drugs destroyed a lot of his relationships and hurt a lot of friends and loved ones. So it's quite handy that these spirit celebrities were kind enough to make their replies so succinct that they could fit into 140 characters or less.
Also, I'm not sure there's a look for River Phoenix in terms of, I don't think there would be a River Phoenix fancy dress costume, but there would certainly be Michael Jackson fancy dress costume. Yeah. I would imagine there's also probably a William Shakespeare, something like that. So does advertising start coming into this? Do they start saying, oh, by the way, as William Shakespeare's been chatting recently on our Twitter, we do have this Bard of Avon costume and this King of Popular Music costume as well.
I think they really missed so many tricks with this.
Why did they do this? This is someone so bored.
It makes
this
no
sense.
This is
trolling, isn't it? This is what trolling is, right?
But look, River Phoenix is still here.
Okay.
What did you think of Interview with the Vampire?
Was he in that?
No.
What?
It was meant to be, and then he died, didn't he?
Oh, is that right?
I think it was meant to have Christian Slater's role.
Go on.
He said, it was amazing. It would be much better than it would have been with me in it.
Oh, self-deprecating in the afterlife.
And are you pleased that Johnny Depp closed the Viper Room on Halloween for 10 years after you died?
Right.
And he said, the Viper Room did great cocktails. I love the design of the toilets.
And the smell of the pavement.
And then he said, but you didn't have to close it for me. I wouldn't want to spoil other people's fun. I'm sorry for doing that to so many people.
Right.
So that's exciting. But River's fading away.
Yeah.
And now we get to know what the medium was sensing. She was looking for Kurt Cobain. She had a fuzzy, spaced out feeling from him, like cotton wool around her face. And Kurt Cobain's very brief stint on Twitter is, again, just a solid anti-drug PSA.
Right.
If he'd started singing Just Say No from the afterlife.
Now, is that plausible?
Wouldn't have spoiled
it. Is it plausible that Cobain, and I don't know Kurt Cobain, I didn't know Kurt Cobain in real life, I know of his public persona, is it plausible that he from the afterlife would say, because he died by his own hand, so it wasn't like this was an accident. It wasn't like, say, Belushi saying it on a seance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, don't mess about with all this. Yeah. Is that plausible? And do you know what? I don't even know why I'm even trying to find loopholes in the argument that it wasn't Kurt Cobain on Twitter that day. I don't know why I'm even entertaining
there's probing questions.
It just wasn't.
Look, I know what you want to ask him. Does he mind being on Guitar Hero? You know, he'd rather kids were playing real guitars.
Right,
That insight. They're going to try and contact Shakespeare.
They're not on this podcast.
They are. Oh, but he's dead weak.
Shakespeare's dead weak.
He's dead weak, mate. Many people have tried to contact him.
Yeah. Might that be because they won't perhaps be able to mimic the voice of Shakespeare quite as well?
And Shakespeare's here, forsooth. Give us follow.
I like the idea of somebody sat at a keyboard with perhaps one other person at this point, not doing a seance at all, but typing it all out and going, oh, we've said Shakespeare. And then them going, would Shakespeare have spoke like he does in the plays, or would he just speak normal in real life?
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, I won't be able to do the Shakespeare. I won't be able to do Shakespeare play voices. Can't do that. But he might just have spoken normally in real life. But I don't know if you Google it quick, see if he did or not. Doesn't say. Can't even tell you how he died. So we don't know anything about William Shakespeare. We'd not ruin it. I thought you'd know loads. I thought we would know loads about it as well. Just say that. Right, okay, hang on. What have you put? I've put that E. It's very weak and I can't read it. Right, now get onto Michael Jackson. All right, can you put that YouTube film on, the one with that bloke from Britain, the Derek Akora one? Put that on. I'm just going to type that out.
Well, Shakespeare didn't get a chance. Didn't get a chance to speak. He was shoved out of the way.
Okay, bye.
Michael Jackson.
Who said?
Who said, Hello, he's been waiting. He's very strong, and he is in paradise.
Okay.
And he's singing. He's joyful. He's a very, very joyful man.
Yeah.
You know, his message for the world is, it isn't say hello to Quincy Jones for me.
No.
But it was very much, you know, love to all my fans, be kind to each other.
All the stuff that he just said.
But the medium said, I quote, he was singing Heal the World. It sounded very pure. And then a question that was really nice and light, who was responsible for you dying? So,
does Michael Jackson reply to this?
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to keep that as a cliffhanger? That'll get them back. All the people that have been listening to this going, bit too heavy for me this now. I'll go, oh, I do want to know what Michael Jackson said in that sentence though. What did he say? Who killed Michael Jackson according to what they purport to be Michael Jackson on Twitter?
No one was responsible. I was warned many times about medication, but the pain was too severe and I felt I could not survive without it. But then he says, sorry for letting you all down and not doing the tour. So I'm glad he's got his priorities right in the afterlife.
Heal the world. Get costumes from Angel's Fancy Dress. Oh, sorry, that's just what he's singing, sorry. Angel's Fancy Dress is the best for your costumes. Sorry, we can't control what's coming through.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope the shop burnt down. Tell you what, when I eventually am assassinated, it's going to be quite the investigation. You'll get loads of shows out of this. For your telly stuff.
Can I monetize your death? Is that right?
I have full permission to do that because there's so, be like, well, who was it? Who did it?
Yeah.
He upset everyone.
Oh, this could be multi-series.
He had to go at everyone. Was it the psychics that got to him? Was it the church that got to him? Was it a loner? Was it an incel?
Yeah.
It was crossed that a fat bloke had had sex and they hadn't.
Yeah.
It's like who shot JR all over again, but I've got to do the actual death thing first. I've got to die. Even if I died of natural causes.
Should we just pretend?
There'd be speculation. No, we can't.
Well, I will.
You can do what you want. All right. But there could be speculation. Was he shut down by the government?
Yeah.
What was it? What happened?
Yeah.
I'm glad I won't have to be involved.
Well, let us know your theories on how Ian will die.
I've already had my supposed friends on the other podcast speculating that this week on Reboot.
You can comment on either of our Patreons about the content of the podcast, not just death-related activities, at patreon.com/IanBoldsworth.
For as long as that's going, obviously. Yeah.
And patreon.com/burialsandbeyond for me. Find us and Avanatta on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, Instagram at Loopholes Pod, Twitter at Loopholes Pod, or you can even send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com.
Brackets, send Kate an email. Thank you for joining us on Loopholes this week. Deep, that one, deep and darker thing. I might try and lighten it. I can't lighten it next week. Demonology in it.
Yeah.
I have been Ian Boldsworth. Thank you.
And I've been Kate Cheryl.
We shall see you again next week.
Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Boldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Boldsworth.